Bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners. And I can still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome into the Bet the Board podcast, powered by betonline.ag. NFL Week 13, Monday Night Football, the topic for discussion. I am, of course, your host and leader most of the time, Todd Furman, joined, as always, by my esteemed colleague and co-host, the one, the only, Payne Insider.
Monday morning. Ugh. Here we go. We're here.
Another day, another dollar, and back on the grind. Of course, Monday shows, we'll have Dr. David Chow with us. You can follow him at Pro Football Doc to talk about some of the injuries and a potentially big one that we saw in Sunday Night Football. I want to thank all of our listeners. Go to iTunes, like always, 5-star reviews. You guys know the gig. And Payne, we may as well start with that Sunday Night Football game, because what better way to kick things off in our week than to try and rip apart Mike Tomlin for not making proper adjustments and squandering a 23-7 lead. The 176th time the Steelers have had a 16-point lead at home, that was their first loss in franchise history.
I feel like you could just wind me up right now and I go for about 12 minutes.
I think that's what people want. I mean, if we go off of the Twitter timeline, because they were going, you know, Payne for the first time said Mike Tomlin wasn't going to be outcoached in a big matchup. And then lo and behold, the Steelers take a massive lead in the break and they squandered away in the second half. That seems to be a common recurring trend so far this season, with their ability to take that momentum, seize it, and just continue to snowball on their opponents.
That game is why the Patriots are probably still favored to go to the Super Bowl. I mean, I know Tomlin's the easy target, and I think I'll probably get to him here. Anthony Lynn's terrible, too, right? I mean, he started off the game with this, like, massive brain fart. He was kicking a field goal on 4th and inches. And, like, not only is that the wrong decision, like, 100 out of 100 times, but think about this for Anthony Lynn. He hasn't had a field goal kicker in, like, 2 years. Like, all the problems San Diego's had with kicking the ball, he decided, in the easiest decision of his life, not to go for it. And he was going to use his kicker to try and kick a field goal in one of, like, the toughest stadiums in the league. It's nuts. I thought Mike Tomlin crushed Anthony Lynn with the game preparation, with the script. I mean, the first half was absolute domination. You look at the phantom touchdown there. That was 33% of the yards and all the points the Chargers had in the first half on a one-play false start. And you can debate it. I went back and watched this morning. All 22 isn't out yet, but I watched on the Game Pass. Literally, the right tackle takes 2 steps back and is, lifts his hand and is ready for engagement before the ball's ever snapped. Like, that is a massive, we talk about this all the time, like turning points, momentum plays. It's 13-0. The Chargers are probably dead and buried there at this point, but you get the momentum play back and it becomes a 1-score game. If you look at the game and how it played off, you get the Big Ben interception inside the 10, you miss a PAT. Worst case scenario, you're up 28-3 at the half. And I thought Tomlin's game plan was pretty good. Initially, it was pretty aggressive, right? And I think if you've heard me talk on this podcast a lot, we talked about it for the Georgia game. If you can throw, like, on first downs, it's going to help a lot. And that's the thing the Steelers did in the first half, if you watch. They threw 11 times on first down. And a lot of it's short passes, right? It's like this extension of the ground game. You look at the second half, and they were super conservative. That was the biggest thing, super conservative. And I think a lot of people look at the box score and say, hey, you led for the majority of that game and Big Ben threw it 45 times. You only ran it 17. But I think, you know, a lot of the things they do is an extension of the ground game with the short passes. But on first down is where it was bad. Like, it was just hand the ball into the line of scrimmage in the second half on the first few possessions and then just kind of hope and pray. I thought the defensive side of the ball for Pittsburgh was where the real issues were. And this has been a problem for a long time now, right? We've seen this when they play the Patriots. Why do the Patriots beat them? Because they play some zone and they keep their linebackers on the field thinking that they can cover receivers in the slot. And we saw
that.
You
mean, wait, You mean putting a linebacker on Keenan Allen wasn't a good idea as you continue to let the Chargers' best offensive player catch ball after ball after ball to the tune of 14 of them yesterday?
All night long. He's got linebackers on Keenan Allen. Like, it was absolutely nuts. So that's where, like, the coaching standpoint for me, like, I know Tomlin's easy target. For me, it was more about the second half, how he defended Keenan Allen. The game plan and the script was fine. That thing's a... Yeah, you know, game's a blowout. It's 28-3 at halftime. That's what it should be. And even from our perspective, like, the game's over with Joe Hayden interception. And I've kind of been talking about this for a couple months now. Like, the ball right now is not bouncing our way. And the game's completely over if Joe Hayden picks that ball off. Instead, his own teammate absolutely crushes him. The ball pops into the air. And, of course, you know, there's a San Diego receiver to catch the deflection. At that point, it's a pick in the end zone. You've taken momentum back. You're still up at what you were up at halftime. There's a minute left late in the third quarter. It's getting into the fourth quarter, and you're going to have the ball. Like, the game's over. And you mentioned one stat, and I know the broadcast mentioned another stat. And again, this is just how it's rolling right now. You were a part of history last night and not on the good side. The Steelers, 220-0 when leading by 14 or more at halftime. So you saw the one, 220-1 now for the Steelers. So it was a tough game. Let's just put it that way. We can end it there.
What does that do to change your perception of the NFC North? I know we're going to talk a little bit about the Ravens, who have probably one of the most intriguing games next weekend on the road at Kansas City. They go into Atlanta. They outgain the Falcons to the tune of a 366 to 131-yard margin. Now, this wasn't all bad for the Falcons. We do have to give a hat tip to Deion Jones. 15 tackles in his return to action for the first time since week one. But when does this Ravens experiment with Lamar Jackson finally come to an end? Because we're going to sit here, and I'm going to say it until I'm blue in the face. Anyone who watched that football game, the Ravens don't win it by the narrow margin that they did. They win that game by 3 touchdowns if Joe Flacco's out there, because John Brown's still running on a ball Lamar Jackson missed when he was wide open 40 yards downfield.
Listen, Lamar Jackson's going to be the quarterback there until they lose, I would think. Like, it would be detrimental to the locker room if you yanked him on a 3-game winning streak. I think the locker room loves him. And specifically, we talked about this last week, the defense. The defense isn't spending a ton of time on the field. They're energized when they go out there. They know they need to be a little bit more in tune. And so I think that's why you're not going to Flacco yet, because you're going to zap the momentum, and you're not going to do that on a 3-game win streak, just me personally. And then again, here we go. You look at the matchup. What can't Kansas City do? And they can't stop the run. And so we're watching Lamar Jackson with picture-perfect opportunities the last 4 weeks. And that's the reality of the situation. So this one will certainly be a fun one to monitor. I know you're going to have to check out the Gus Edwards injury. I think he came out of the game. He's been pretty banged up. But he's getting picture-perfect matchups. And when you look at this game and how you beat Kansas City potentially is running the football. So it's likely Lamar Jackson. But we saw him depart that game again, right? Took another shot. And you just have to wonder if he's going to be able to survive.
Yeah, we got an RG3 sighting for a little while yesterday. I got excited watching that football game.
You got excited about watching RG3. That's interesting. Very interesting. decent-looking girl. Decent-looking girlfriend there. Now, I think fiance
of course,
went to...
believe she of course went to ties State. To Florida State.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
Decent-looking
of
girl.
Of course.
so,
Jesus Christ.
No stories on her on this podcast. But... You're not going away from Lamar Jackson at this point. And I said on the last podcast, listen, we don't know how good he is. He's getting ideal situations, but I'm certainly willing to ride him if he's going to cash our win ticket for us.
Yeah, get me to 9 wins, and Lamar Jackson will build a Bet the Board statue, and we'll paint it in orange and black for you.
I'd actually be willing have to one... donate money to get him to like a passing camp or something.
You did have one coach who walked the sidelines up at Lambeau Field for the last time. We feel like he was a dead man walking. It just happened to come a little bit sooner when the Packers lose outright as 14-point favorites. Who becomes, I mean, I guess I can kind of throw this out there. I mean, a logical candidate, I don't really care if you have any names off the top of your head. And how much of the ownership for the Packers' struggles this year should actually fall on Aaron Rodgers?
I don't know who's going to replace McCarthy yet. I don't know. In terms of long term, I don't know. They made Philbin the coach. Cool. I don't know.
Your boy getting a head coaching gig again.
This should have happened a long time ago. Right, and I think finally, like, the organization reached the breaking point. You know, you lose at home as a 2-touchdown favorite to Arizona. You can't lose games like that with your playoff hopes on the line. I know McCarthy came out and he's like, I was shocked. They called me into the office immediately after the
then
game.
Then he's just an idiot.
This was long overdue, right? You just look at the schemes, you look at the game plans, like, it's horrific. You look at what the receivers do. The route tree concepts in the pass game are basically all about guys winning one-on-one, Rodgers having to, like, place balls perfectly. Like, there's very little, you know, scheming of getting guys open by McCarthy. There's not much in the vertical pass game. You look at yesterday's numbers. Rodgers completes 3 passes downfield for 10 or more yards. Didn't have a 20-yard completion. Like, 2 of the 3 catches of 10 or more yards were, like, improvised off script when he had to leave the pocket because of pressure. Like, you saw this run on 3rd and inches. McCarthy pitches the ball backwards 6 yards on a run play, and, like, Aaron Rodgers is, like, shaking his head, like, what the hell did we do here? You know, Joe Philbin, I think, was the obvious choice for the interim gig. He's had a head coaching experience, him and Aaron Rodgers. Like, those guys are butt buddies. But he's not very good. I think initially we'll see some improvement, right? But I've seen Joe Philbin for multiple years. The players like him, so I think that's good. He runs a tight ship, but the game plans aren't very good. It can take up for, like, 3-4 weeks for him to, like, fix issues and adjust. So from that perspective, I'm not sure how much better it gets, but I think we see, like, an initial lift. I think the question becomes is how good is Aaron Rodgers at this point? And we all forget he sat behind Favre for so long. Like, he's 35 years old, and he is missing throws that he usually doesn't miss. Now, is that intentional? Maybe. Is he missing?
Yeah, you mean, that was what I was going to ask you. That was going to be my follow-up. And you hate to make cross-sport parallels, but you wonder about level of focus. And I think a lot of the same things people are saying about Justin Verlander. When he was pitching for the Detroit Tigers, he's done. He can't pitch the same way. All of a sudden, he gets a new lease on life when he gets shipped over to the Astros. And you're like, wait a second, this dude's got a lot more left in the tank than we initially anticipated.
Yeah. You know, maybe with a good coach and a great game plan, like, he's still a competent quarterback. He's still very good. But if you looked at a lot of the metrics coming into the season, he'd struggled a little bit in some key areas, and he's continued to struggle a little bit this season. He's not the great quarterback he's been in the past few years. I mean, the Seattle game, he missed wide open touchdowns. You throw on some of the all 22, he's just making poor decisions. He's holding on to the ball a little bit too long. So Aaron Rodgers isn't what he's been the last couple years. Maybe he gets reinvigorated with a guy that he likes here in Joe Philbin, and maybe they can make the right hire. I don't know who that guy's going to be. I think there's probably a laundry list of guys that would want that gig, right? I mean, it's a great organization. So let's see what plays out. Has betonline.ag come out with odds yet?
I have not seen any odds from them. I was going to say, you know, why don't you pull Bruce Arians out of the booth? Get him down there.
Would he come back? I think it was more health-related. I really
do. Yeah, I think so, too.
Yeah. It would be perfect. The no risk it, no biscuit mentality with Aaron Rodgers. That would be awesome.
Yeah, it'd be very interesting to see what direction they go in. And you think Aaron Rodgers, the money that you've committed to him, he has to be integral in whatever candidate they elect to bring in. And now McCarthy can't bear that cross if Rodgers can't win over the tail end of his career, knowing how much money he's owed. Aside from that pain, I mean, we saw a couple games losing the turnover battle. Obviously, it gives you no chance. The 49ers outgained the Seahawks. They lose by 27 points, but they finish -3 in turnovers. The Browns, they absolutely crushed the Texans on the stat sheet. 8.2 to 5.2 yards per play, but finish -4. They lose by 16 points. And the Panthers, I know we're going to talk to Dr. Chow a little bit more about the Panthers and what might be contributing to their struggles. They lose a turnover battle -3 despite outgaining their opponent by 115 plus yards per play, 1.5 net better. Anything else that you learned this week that we think we can apply going forward?
Well, you managed to mention 2 games we were on there, right? The 49ers. I thought Nick Mullins was pretty good there yesterday. I thought he probably had his best game since the initial Oakland start, and certainly Seattle's defense is a much tougher task on the road. And you look at that game, the Niners had 74 offensive snaps. Seattle had just 49, and you nailed it, right? It's the turnovers. That's the name of the game. And they were in critical spots for the 49ers. You get the fumble there from Wilson Jr. He fumbles at like the 5 or 6. I think it's debatable. I think whatever they would have called on the field would have stood there, but his butt was clearly down. But you get that one. You get the 14-point swing pick 6 on the 98-yarder, and then the momentum play, I think, before half was huge. You're going to get the ball back right before half around midfield, and with nobody in his face, you get the muffed punt, and it turns into a 33-yard drive after a 15-yard penalty on your defense. So, you know, I don't know. The one thing I texted you during that game was, I love Shanahan. He is a great offensive mind. They need to figure out just how to make him an offensive mind. I think there's some stuff going on there where he's not great in other areas. There's not a ton of discipline. This team's just a slew of turnovers. They make mental errors. Like, yesterday was just tough to watch that game. If the 49ers literally just did not turn the ball over, got a shot to potentially win that game. And I know people will go nuts and say, like, look at the scoreboard. But, man, you nailed it. The yards per play was a mess. I thought Nick Mullins looked pretty good aside from the pick six late.
So you mentioned that. I think it's an we talked about the Browns and the Panthers. I mean, both teams losing and what look like lopsided scores, but anyone who watched those games, significantly different. I mean, the Browns, Baker Mayfield throws early picks. You get a pick six as part of it. The Texans are able to play with house money and downhill. The Browns start to come back, and we see the big fumble from Antonio Callaway. But, no, you mentioned an interesting point on Shanahan, and we know that John Lynch is basically going to tie his legacy in San Francisco to Shanahan. How do you rectify that situation, though? If you realize you could bring in a guy and you're not catering things to his strength, that he is that offensive mind, but he can't be the CEO of the company. He's not going to step down and go, you know what, I don't want to be the head coach. I'm going to be the offensive coordinator. What do you look to do to try and maintain some of that momentum? You're going to get Jimmy G back. And the 49ers, you know, whether it's good, bad, or indifferent, I almost look at it like, you know what, this is a season they expected to be better. They're going to get a top three pick overall, maybe top or probably top two. And it's not quite the San Antonio Spurs with Tim Duncan getting Tim Duncan when they have Dave Robinson. But the Niners are going to get an elite player at the top of the draft.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's the positives here. That's the one glimmer of hope. And, you know, listen, Shanahan is brilliant. They just need to figure out what he can do, right? He's an offensive mind. This needs to be a situation where it's like McVay 2.0. McVay doesn't even care what's going on defense. He's entrusted a veteran coach to make plays. He's over on the sidelines drawing up offensive stuff while the defense on the field. He's not even watching half the time. So that's kind of what it needs to be. You need to find a defensive coordinator. Now, I like what they've done here defensively. They got gashed yesterday a little bit. But you just need to get them away from making personnel decisions. That's you end up paying a third down back like $40 million and tears his ACL because that was the guy Shanahan had to have. Now, I get it. He probably would have been a huge help. But you're going to get picks at the top of the draft, as you alluded to. You're going to get Jimmy G back. You like the momentum and the trajectory. It needs to be a focus on offense. There needs to be someone there. There needs to be a little more accountability. I don't love that his teams are undisciplined.
No, I mean, we see it all the time in the league. If you don't turn the football over and you don't take stupid penalties because the talent is a lot closer than people are led to believe, you can stay in every football game. I mean, the perfect illustration of that yesterday was the Jaguars. They weren't great by any stretch of the imagination, but they didn't give the Colts short fields. Cody Kessler was a glorified game manager, and you saw the defense raise its level of play to beat the Colts 6-0. But I wasn't sure if there was anything else you wanted to touch on before we switched gears and headed into some of the look-ahead numbers.
You were trying to jab at my Dolphins' beautiful win, the dominating performance they put forth. Is that what you were trying to do?
I was going
to
try. You didn't elect to take the bait, so I didn't want to try and bring it back up when I look at a game. And hold on. I'm going to read off some of these statistics for people that didn't watch that game. Buffalo did take professional money in that particular spot. So the
game
Bills outgained the Dolphins. Huh? Well, I'm sorry?
Game got middled, right? Could have took five early
in
the week
and
laid
3.5. You could have taken six and, and laid the 3.5. So the Bills outgained the Dolphins 415 to 175. They out first down them 24-15. Yards per play, Buffalo 6.3 to 3.5. And Buffalo, of course, loses the turnover battle. Yet another Picasso from the Miami Dolphins. They gain less than 200 yards. And for the second time this season, they win a football game against a team from the state of New York in the division.
Yeah, well, they should have won the Colts game. So it's the same thing. Like, flip them around, it doesn't matter. It was a weird game. I think Buffalo obviously deserved to win the game when you look at the metrics. Miami played horribly. Tannehill was bad all game, had a few clutch throws that were relatively timely. And the Dolphins defense got enough stops, forced some turnovers, as you mentioned. The Bills offense was interesting. It was weird. It was like this backyard football production, basically. It was like a slew of just busted plays where Josh Allen improvises. He ran for 135 yards. The Dolphins somehow didn't know to keep a spy on him. Kiko Alonso is just absolutely dreadful. Like, yeah, I'm over that. Please draft a linebacker. And so most of their offense for the Bills came off these busted plays where either Allen was running or he was like outside the pocket, like hitting some plays. He missed a lot of easy throws. Man, is he not accurate. But I think the yardage gap could have been much, much larger. Like, he missed a deep play that would have put him back up three, obviously, the game winner there to Clay. I thought it was a great play. Clay's got to make that grab, but, you know, put a little more oomph on that ball, and it's a touchdown. So it was an odd game to watch, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, either way, I mean, some interesting results as we continue to figure out who these teams are. Coming down the home stretch with only four games left to play, which I think is interesting, Payne, because from a look-ahead standpoint, we've seen odds makers make, I don't want to say comprehensive adjustments, but more significant changes than I would have expected at this late juncture in the season. And I think a great place to start is with the Lamar Jackson game, as Baltimore's on the road at Kansas City. Current number at betonline.ag, Kansas City a 7-point favorite. Total in this game, 52.5. Look-ahead number here on this one had Kansas City a 9.5-point chalk. KC, they go on the road, workmanlike effort without Kareem Hunt, beating the Raiders 40-30, I think 40-30, 40-33, somewhere in that ballpark. We agree with this move with Lamar, or, I mean, it's just business as usual?
Well, it did reopen 8 this week, right? So you're looking at 9.5 versus 8, you know. And now we're down to soft 7 off the open. It'll be interesting to see where this goes. I don't think we're going to see Flacco. I just wouldn't expect that. I just don't know what that would do to the locker room right now. And then you do have that nice matchup advantage of a physical Baltimore team being able to run the ball. The one thing you definitely want to check on is Eric Berry. That's why this whole Kareem Hunt situation is brutal for the organization, is their defense was probably all you need from that defense is to be slightly below average. And I think, you know, the return of that man in the secondary would have been absolutely vital for Kansas City's playoff push. But this is, you know, if Eric Berry comes back for this one, it makes it interesting. But I do think we see Lamar here. The total is quite interesting. That'll be something interesting to monitor, because you think Baltimore's ground and pound, and certainly that Kansas City offense is going to be challenged here for sure.
Yeah, I'm curious to see how this number moves. I mean, when Lamar is officially named the quarterback, like you said, we assume that he is going to be that guy. Look-ahead number here, a game that loses a little bit of its luster in the AFC South coming off of that Colts loss. So right now at betonline.ag, we are looking at the Houston Texans, a 4.5-point favorite, total on the game 49. Look-ahead number here had the Texans a 3-point favorite. You did have to lay $1.20. The Texans continue to go out there and win football games, even if we talked about the statistical profile didn't support a 16-point victory.
It's always fun kind of seeing these market indicators, and you treat the Colts as like, you know, a stock. And one, they were 6-6, I don't know what the heck the record was. What did they start the season? Like 1-5?
One and six, yeah, somewhere in that
they
range.
They basically reached their peak before the Dolphins game. And I know that was a game we both took 10 on, and they didn't play well in that game at all. Didn't deserve to win. The offense didn't perform well at all. And this was a tough spot for them here against Jacksonville. The line was just funky when you thought about it. Take 4.5 at home with the Jaguars. You were catching +3 with the Jags in Indianapolis a couple weeks prior. So that was always interesting. But basically, the Colts reached the peak of the market. And so we're seeing them come back down to life a little bit. The offense struggling just a little bit, obviously, got shut out. That was odd to see them get shut out yesterday. But that's what happened. Didn't perform well against the Dolphins, as I alluded to. So some things on that side of the ball need to get rectified. I thought the defense played pretty well, obviously, yesterday. I think the defense is starting to come around just a touch. But this game, as you alluded to, lost some of its luster here. It'll be interesting to see where this line goes. There's usually very few lines that I'm not sure where they're going. I have a pretty good gauge on where the market's heading. This is one I'm not quite sure.
Yeah, I mean, I'm curious to see. I mean, not as much sense of urgency either, oddly enough, as it is to say for the Houston Texans. But I guess when you look at the overall profile of the AFC, I'm sure Houston would love to try and find a way to slide into that 2 spot if they're at all capable of doing that.
They're getting healthy at the right time.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. A team that started 0-3 all of a sudden on the inside track to do some special things this season. New England headed down to your neck of the woods. 7.5-point favorites at betonline.ag. Total on the game, 47.5. I know we talked about the Dolphins a little bit and their fraudulent victory against the Bills, but the look-ahead number here, Payne, had the Dolphins a 10.5-point home pup.
Miami seems to play New England pretty well at home. And this will be a home run effort for sure. Tom Brady's really struggled in the state of Florida, specifically when he comes down here. It'll be vital, I think, to check the weather, see how hot it gets and how humid it gets. I would expect Miami to be back in the white uniforms make New England dress in the dark uniform. So it'll be interesting to see. I did see a little early money come in on Miami. It'll be interesting to see how low this dips. I don't know if we're going to see a replication of the past few years. I would have liked this game to be earlier in the season. That's one thing we've seen with some of these Miami games. We referenced it a few weeks ago. New England's just a different team this late in the season. And we've kind of always had the metrics but never got the mindset. And so that's why that Tlaib quote we kept bringing up, where it was basically off script. Someone just asked him, he was doing a television show, is asking him, hey, like, what's going on with New England? He's like, hey, chill out. Like, I just want to let you know I've been in that locker room. And after Thanksgiving is when the season starts, and everyone seems to be more tuned in and focused. So I'm not running to take Miami right now. Let's see where this line goes. But initially, there's a few spots that open 9.5. I did see some buy to 10, very small though.
So we have a massive game on Sunday night as far as the NFC pecking order is concerned. Although, again, the Bears stubbed their toe on the road against the Giants despite heroics to even push that game into overtime. Look-ahead number had the Rams a field goal favorite at Soldier Field, a game that'll be flexed into Sunday Night Football's time slot. Right now we're looking at the Rams, though, a 3.5-point favorite at betonline.ag, and you don't have a whole lot of books with the total open in this game. You do have one shop out here in the desert that elected to hang a 51.
I would think Trubisky's back for this one.
I mean, you have to think if he's not back for this one, you have some real concerns about that shoulder going forward.
I would think so, and I know Dr. Chow talked about it last week, I believe. Said it was a shoulder bruise, usually a 2 to 3 week injury. The question is, you know, do you bring him back here if he's not 100%? Probably not at this point, I wouldn't think, right? With the loss to the Giants, I don't know how much ground you're making up here, but you do have the Rams who just clinched the division. I want to see what this weather looks like. I want to look at a couple of these injury reports before I do anything here, but certainly, you know, one spot open four, took some money on the dog. I need more time here with this game, and I'm certainly one we are for sure going to break down extensively on Thursday's podcast.
That we will, no doubt about it. And you mention a familiar name that you hear on the podcast in Dr. Chow. It's time to hear about what kind of injuries transpired over the weekend.
Are you injured or are you hurt?
When injuries occur in the NFL, there's only one man to turn to.
If you hurt, you can still play. If you're injured, you can't.
Let's check in with 17-year NFL team doctor turned medical analyst, Dr. David Chow.
So are you hurt or are you injured?
This is Chow's Corner.
He joins us every week at this time right here on the Bet the Board podcast. You can follow Dr. David Chow on Twitter at ProFootballDoc. He is the preeminent expert all things injury related in the National Football League. And Dr. Chow, it wouldn't be a Sunday night football game if we didn't see one of the marquee emerging superstars in the league go down with an injury. How long should Steelers fans expect James Conner to be shelved as they continue to push forward in their quest for a playoff spot?
Well, it depends on what he has. The head coach says he's got a contusion. And by video, it's pretty clear to me it's a high ankle sprain injury. And you can go to my Twitter timeline and check it out and see. You don't have to be a doctor. Now, is it really a hard blow, or is the ankle trapped and is there a twist? Pretty clear to me it's a high ankle. I think it's a mild high ankle. It's not completely trapped. He does get his foot free. It depends on how much it swells overnight. He was seen in the locker room walking around with a slight limp, so it wasn't too bad. But it really depends on how much it swells for a high ankle. Remember, Matt Breida, he returned without missing much time on that high ankle. So we'll really have to see the severity of high ankle. I'm thinking it's mild, but it's definitely a high ankle in my mind.
That'd be a tough guy to lose, especially when your backup is Samuels and there's not much behind him at that point. Another lower body injury that I was pretty curious about, just to kind of figure out, you know, is this long term? What do we make of it? Is he going to continue his career? Greg Olsen of the Carolina Panthers, they've dropped four straight. They're in the middle of a playoff push. Obviously, he's a key cog. What do we make of his foot injury? Did he come back too soon? Is this something that he's going to return from? What do we make of this?
Well, Greg Olsen is a warrior, a tough guy, and really what he was trying to do, I think, is fairly heroic. he broke that foot again, the metatarsal fracture that people usually have a second surgery for. And, you know, everyone from Dez Bryant to Julian Edelman, Julio Jones, have all had second surgeries when they've had further problems. Greg Olsen this year, since he missed 8 weeks last year from the week two injury, when he hurt it again, rebroke it week one, he went the route of no surgery to try and let it heal and try and play through earlier instead of missing more time. And, you know, he did it. Congratulations. And he was out about 4 weeks, and then he's been marginally effective. Obviously, his usage has changed a little bit, but he admits that he's been compensating all season for the foot. And it's not technically the same bone that's broken. He acknowledged that in an interview that the bone still maybe not wasn't completely healed, but it's a plantar fascia that got him this time. Apparently that ruptured. And he says he's done for the season and hopefully not career. I mean, he should be able to come back, but just, I think he's 34.
Tough at this age for sure. And one of his teammates, Cam Newton, a little speculation here, but it appears to be his velocity is down at this point. They take him out for the final play, the Hail Mary, so he can't make that deep throw. You listen to the press conference afterwards, Ron Rivera kind of alluded to the fact that Cam's got a sore shoulder, says it's day to day. Do you see anything there?
I didn't see anything particular in terms of a hit this week. I do think it's something that he's been dealing with. I don't think it's related to his shoulder surgery from a couple of years ago where he had a cleanup and a bone spur. At this point in time, it's hard to say. Is it just throwing too much? Is it a bruise that he's been dealing with? Or is there something more structural? I don't have specific video to indicate anything that is different. But I will say that it's not an uncommon problem to have in terms of, you know, things that are going on. I mean, it's week 13 in the NFL, and there's a lot going on. I can promise everyone that there are a lot more injuries that the training room and the doctors are dealing with than what shows up on any injury report.
No doubt about it. Certainly those key cogs for Carolina, you'd love to have them healthy down this playoff stretch, but it looks like Cam's a little beat up, and we know Olsen's now out for the year. Another guy, A.J. Green, he had the foot injury. Looks like he potentially came back too soon. It was a non-contact cut this time. Is he out for the season at this point?
Well, I think that's certainly something that's on the table for discussion. I mean, he missed 3 weeks. And this time he was just getting off the line of scrimmage, back foot, right foot back. And as he pushed off, you can see he pulls up and goes down and in a boot, which doesn't surprise me. But his reaction, and he left before the end of the game. He probably just out of frustration. So this point in time, you know, he's certainly not playing next week. And then how much longer can the Bengals stay alive in the playoff race? And it's a race against time and the record at this point in time. So the season probably is in jeopardy, but, you know, I don't think he's going to need surgery on that foot. It's just he needs more time.
Dr. Chow, I kind of want to switch gears a little bit here and go to the college ranks. I have to ask you about Tua because that situation smells a little fishy. It looks like he got his ankle rolled up on. Alabama's calling it a high ankle sprain. He had surgery. Saban's claiming he's out for 2 weeks. This game is being played in 26 days. What are the odds Tua is 100% for that game?
Well, you know, excuse me. I don't really watch college. It's family time and stuff, but on Twitter and other things that I've seen enough video and people have been tweeting and talking about it. All I can say is the fact pattern doesn't fit. By video, he has a low ankle sprain. Someone steps on his own lineman, steps on the inside of his ankle, cleats him, and he rolls his ankle into an inversion, standard low basketball type ankle sprain. Then there's an announcement that he had a high ankle sprain. So unless there's different video, that doesn't fit. And then there's something about surgery. Well, typically for whether it's a high ankle sprain or a low ankle sprain, you don't need surgery. And then the two-week return. I mean, I suppose it's possible. And if you have an ankle scope, and especially if you take out a little loose chip or something, to be back in 2 weeks. But hard for me to say because the fact pattern doesn't fit. So something is screwy here.
Yeah, always interesting when you wonder about these programs, how quickly they'll send players under the knife to make sure they're ready for some of the biggest games. As Alabama measures the merits of their season with national championships and nothing less. Did have one last NFL.
I'll tell you this thing about Alabama. It's not a Nick Saban criticism, but I think it's maybe because of their talent and how they practice against each other. When I was at the combines, it was known that it seemed to us, the doctors there, that the Alabama players and USC players at the time came in when Pete Carroll was in USC and then other schools. And these were the dominant programs at the time. And a lot of the players, when we talked to them, would say their practices were harder than their games. So they put a lot more wear and tear on their body. And the final note on Tua is that the colleges don't require any sort of formal injury reporting. And maybe that'll change with gambling, who knows. But Alabama or any school can say anything they want about their player or say nothing, and they can blatantly not tell the truth on it, and there's no repercussions in terms of what goes on. Obviously, you can't in the NFL. I mean, the Ryan Tannehill situation in where the team got fined, et cetera. So it's the Wild West in terms of college reporting and injuries.
Yeah, it always makes you wonder, and we've seen plenty of Alabama running backs when they get to the league not exactly pan out, and it may further support your point that these guys take such a beating going through the SEC grind and practices that by the time they get to the NFL, there's not that much tread left on their tires. But from an SEC player to a Big 12 player in the National Football League, Chris Harris, they're saying broken fibula, Dr. Chow, 4 weeks potentially, no surgery. What did you make of his injury yesterday against the Cincinnati Bengals?
Well, it's exactly what it looked like on video, and actually I was watching that game when it happened. So within, I think, 30 seconds, we tweeted out some video pictures and the thought that he may have broken his fibula. It was a leg whip type injury. Definitely different than what Earl Thomas had earlier this season. The fibula is a non-weight-bearing bone. The tibia is the bigger weight-bearing bone. That's why Earl Thomas is out and et cetera. And Chris Harris does indeed have a chance to come back. This type of fracture doesn't need surgery. It obviously hurts. And it's not impossible that he'll be back in 4 weeks. I was saying maybe closer to 6 because he's a DB and to get to 100%. But it's not impossible to be back in 4 weeks. I've had NFL players with that type of injury return in 4 weeks, a running back in particular. So we'll have to see.
These guys are a lot tougher than me. If I had a broken finger pain, I might take like 6 weeks off on the podcast around these parts.
I'm trying to figure out why Dr. Chow was watching the Bengals game so intently. Are you a big Jeff Driskel fan?
I end up with the game mix and 8 games on and hopping between, and I think it was probably an AJ Green check at the time, to tell you the truth. Some of these Sundays, especially when all 16 are playing, I can finish and I go, let me check the scores, who actually won here, because I'm jumping around so much.
That makes sense.
It is the name of the game. It's red zone for injuries, and that's what makes you the best, Dr. Chow. All of our listeners can follow Dr. David Chow on Twitter at Pro Football Doc. He is the leader in all things injury related for your sports betting needs. And of course, as you approach the fantasy football playoffs, Dr. Chow, can't thank you enough for your time this morning, and look forward to chatting with you next week about the inevitable injury barrage that we'll see during the course of the week 14 schedule.
Thanks, guys.
Look at you over there, a man who says Mondays are reserved for the National Football League, bringing up the most prominent injury of the entire weekend in all of college football, something I never thought that you would do on this fine podcast.
Tua, he's important. Got to figure out what his status is for the big game. I thought it felt a little fishy looking at things, seeing things, and I just wanted to pick Dr. Chow's brain on it. Glad he thought it felt a little odd as well, but you have 26 days. Hopefully he's 100%, because certainly that game would look a little different with Jalen Hurts, I think.
Yeah, it looks and smells. Speaking of Tua, and I know we don't have a college football podcast this week, but wanted to get your take on it. And I know we hate to talk about some of these awards and all of that stuff, but I got to bring it up because I know some of our listeners are curious. Tua was a massive favorite to take home the Heisman Trophy as early as 3 weeks ago. We saw that gap start to narrow a little bit. Do you think, given the performance and some of his struggles on Saturday, and Jalen Hurts having to come in to be the savior to keep Alabama undefeated, Kyler Murray erases the lone blemish, their loss to Texas, that Kyler Murray has a chance to swoop in and win this award?
I think it got much closer, right? The gap closed significantly. I'm I'm more of a Tua guy. He played horrifically when he wasn't, missing just throws after throws. I mean, wide open guys. But I think it's Tua's award. They ran the table. He was fantastic. Some of the first half numbers are numbers we haven't ever seen put up before in college football. So I think he deserves the award. It's tough for me to get behind the whole Kyler Murray thing. He's awesome. He's great. I think the bigger question is what happens if, you know, this quarterback class is a little bit sketchy. We know he's got the $4 million waiting for him to play baseball, but if somehow he became a first-round pick and you can get, you know, and you're a top-10 pick or maybe even the first quarterback taken, that'll be the interesting debate. Does he take the guaranteed $20, $26 million, whatever it is, depending on how high he goes, or is he going to ride buses for a couple of years making $4 million? So that'll be an interesting debate. But I'm not giving it to Kyler Murray. I'm going with Tua, just the full body of work, how dominant they've been. It... Going against Big 12 defenses, man. I can't get that out of my head. It would be interesting to see what Alabama did in the Big 12 against those defenses. I mean, you know, Tua is probably only playing in quarter and a half at that point.
There were a lot of people, though, that said similar things about Patrick Mahomes, and we know how well he's worked out, at least in his second season.
I like the Kansas City Chiefs.
I know you were on the you were on the Mahomes bandwagon a lot earlier than most, and it's definitely paid dividends so far as he continues to put up impressive video game gaudy numbers leading that particular team, which will have to go forward without one of their key playmakers. But into the final order of business this fine podcast, Payne, we have a Monday Night Football game, an NFC East elimination game of sorts between the Washington Redskins and the Philadelphia Eagles. Right now you're looking at Philadelphia, a 6-point favorite at betonline.ag. Total on this game sits at 44.5. And there's so many different ways you can go about this or to try and set this particular game up. But I think the first question I have is with the Philadelphia Eagles defense, can they find the stops tonight against a Redskins offense that'll be led by Colt McCoy for its second straight week?
I think that's the big question, right? And I would think Colt McCoy has some success. That's why we're seeing Redskins money come in from the onset here. This open 7, 6.5. Your opportunity to get 7 now is completely gone. I think this is a better situation for Colt McCoy too, right? The Thanksgiving situation was tough. It was that short week. It was on the road. And I think most people know by now, right? Those short week road teams, they rarely practice in full ever. Right? Like that Monday, you're getting the game plan. It's film day. Tuesday's the walkthrough. Wednesday travel. Thursday morning, you go through that walkthrough. So Colt McCoy didn't see live bullets that week at practice. And if you listen to his Tuesday presser before the Dallas game, he said, hey, I'm going to probably be rusty here. The goal is to not make mistakes early on and hurt my team. So I think this is a different vibe for Colt McCoy. He's got that extra time, 11 days to focus on a game plan and get better acclimated to his weapons. He's going to get some nice ones back, right? Chris Thompson, I think, is absolutely back tonight. He's that elite pass catching back. Jamison Crowder, I think he's back in the slot tonight. And I think this is kind of something we've discussed ad nauseum here because we've broken down some Eagles games recently. Their secondary is a mess right now. You can make plays on that secondary. They're decimated with injuries. I was poking around at this since week 9. The Eagles defense allowed 55% of passes to great success. So that's the third worst mark in the NFL over that time. You look at the rest of that defense. It's beat up too in other places. Jordan Hicks, their stud linebacker, he's not playing tonight. He's fantastic in coverage. I think that's why the return of Chris Thompson catching balls out of the backfield and Jamison Crowder in the slot are important for this game. You get Nigel Bradham, the kid from FSU, broke his thumb, had surgery on that. He's apparently going to play with like a club on his hand. Who's he covering with a club on his hand? Like, I don't know. Michael Bennett could only participate in walkthroughs this week. Doug Peterson, if you listen to him, he said he's playing. We know Derek Bennett's been out like for a while. They're just crushed with injuries. The front 7, because of those injuries, you got Barnett out, Bennett barely playing. Like, I don't know how good they are against the run either. If you kind of abstract and remove what Philadelphia's done the first 3 weeks of the season, when that defense was completely healthy and the front 7 was dominant, and you just look since week 4, the Eagles can't stop the run either. Like 23rd in success rate rushing defense. Maybe Washington's a little more balanced tonight too. So I think those are some of the things to look at. Partly why this total has crept up, and we can discuss the total at the end there because there's some interesting movement back and forth now at this point.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, the total number hasn't really held steady. We did see a wave of under money actually come into the market earlier this morning about the time we were firing up this good old podcast machine. So we know a little bit more about the Redskins offense, and getting the likes of Chris Thompson and Jamison Crowder back as playmakers goes a long, long way, especially for a backup quarterback in Colt McCoy. You mentioned the injuries on the Eagles defense, but the other side of the ball with this Eagles team, Carson Wentz, I mean, you look at some of the numbers that he's put forth so far this season, Payne. Passing numbers remain strong. Completion rate, career best, nearly 70%. Passer rating down a touch at a shade under 101, and 16 touchdown passes to 6 interceptions. But the element of his game that appears to really be lacking is his ability to run. And you can believe what they're saying. Oh, no, it's by design. We don't want him to run. The knee isn't the issue. But when you consider that he's only has 100 yards through 9 games this season, last year through 13 games he ran for about 300 yards, that changes a lot of what Philadelphia wants to do to extend plays and change some of his mobility in the pocket. I mean, all we have to do is look at how he performed against the Redskins last year in a similar spot, somehow evading a major pass rush and coming up with the single biggest momentum play in that particular football game.
Yeah, for sure. And potentially, you know, Jason Peters, what's his status? You know, he's missed practice all week dealing with the personal injury issue. You listen to Doug Peterson, the reporters are asking him every single day, and his response is, I'm hopeful he plays tonight. Have you heard anything more concrete on Jason Peters?
I have not. I have not heard anything above what I've read out there, and know that he was out for personal reasons, and so he hasn't been an active participant in any of the practices thus far. But I think for some of those folks and on our listeners may not know some of the dimensions. I mean, he is the key cog for what Philadelphia wants to do on that offensive line.
Yeah, absolutely. And so the one thing I do know and what I'm hearing, and it's obviously offensive-based, the Eagles want to use more tempo. That's what I'm hearing tonight. They want to get into form. Apparently, they, you know, it's going to sound stupid, obviously. They want to build the lead. But yes, they want to build the lead. They want to play from in front tonight because they know their defense has some issues. And when you look at Jay Gruden's Redskins, it makes sense. He's won 2 games in 39 tries when trailing by 7 or more. So the Eagles offense wants to get out fast. They want to help their defense out. Certainly, as you alluded to, there's been some struggles offensively on that side of the ball. I proposed this theory a month ago about Frank Reich moving on to Indy and John DeFilippo going on to Minneapolis at Minnesota. And so I don't know if the brains left town. I think they did. There's certainly some injury issues. Sproles returns tonight. There's a lot of stuff going on with Philadelphia internally right now. There's a lot of odd stuff. I'm just going to put it that way. Like, it was the first time in NFL history where a Super Bowl team basically got rid of its entire, medical staff, its trainers, and you're starting to hear internally, guys aren't coming back as quickly now. They're not quite sure what's going on. The Sproles injury with the hamstring was supposed to be like a 2-3-week thing. Took him 9 weeks to initially come back. Then he goes in the game, gets injured, and he's out like another 3-4 weeks. The Jay Ajayi thing was embarrassing. I don't know if a lot of people know this, but he tore his ACL. They couldn't diagnose it on the sidelines. They put him in a brace and put him back out there with a torn ACL. There's just a lot of crap going on internally with this Eagles team, specifically on offense. When you look at what the Eagles are doing offensively, at its core, they're 20th in efficiency, and they've played the 4th easiest schedule of opposing defenses. It's not good right now. You mentioned Carson Wentz's ability to run, and they just haven't been very good running the ball as a team. Like, if you look at some of the metrics, it doesn't look bad, right? But 4.2 yards per carry, that's 23rd in the league. It has to do partly with Carson Wentz not being as mobile, not wanting to be a willing runner. I think no matter how you slice it, that's just this added dimension that's missing from the Eagles' offense. I think everyone, if you do your reading, is extremely hyped about Josh Adams. I think he could certainly play a role tonight if the hip issue doesn't flare up. I know he was a late add to the injury report. The Redskins' defense hasn't been able to stop the run at all. They've allowed 50% of runs to great successful. So this is just kind of a really interesting matchup. It's tough for me. There is professional money on the dog here at 7. At 6.5, there was still being buys to 7 minus 20. This is so tough because the Redskins, I think, are generally overrated here. The metrics don't even come close to agreeing with them being an above 500 football team. The Eagles don't look great either, and they've been crushed by injuries and have key injuries tonight. But this is a division game. You'd think it's played probably pretty tight. You know, I don't think anyone's making up two games here, Todd, on Dallas. If the loser here is basically eliminated, I would think.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, whoever drops this game is done with Dallas's upset of the Saints, and we didn't even touch on that with how impressive that performance was to essentially get shut out in a half of football in your own building and still find a way to beat the Saints, holding Drew Brees to all sorts of career lows. But I think it's interesting. You mentioned some of the Eagles' turmoil, and that's been well-documented. There's a fascinating story if anybody wants to read it. I think I saw it on Football Wire talking about how Carson Wentz maybe targeting Zach Ertz too often and creating chemistry issues for the offense. Always find that stuff fascinating when anonymous sources are willing to come out and speak about that. When you consider that, who else is he supposed to throw to? Nelson Aguilar, Alshon Jeffrey? It's not like the Eagles are flowing with weapons on that offensive side of the ball.
Nelson Aguilar, that's an interesting name. If you read the quote, if you read the quote, it's probably not too difficult to know where that quote came from. So, yes, it sounds like some internal issues. Now, Zach Ertz, just give the guy the goddamn ball. Like, I think, you know, listen, great season. He's a matchup nightmare. Washington has had some issues covering the tight end. I would think it's probably another big night for Zach Ertz. But the total, I think, here is interesting. And it's somewhat of a funny story. So, we were recording the podcast last Thursday. And this total was 43.5. And we were looking over. And there is a group. There's another couple guys that also record something while we're going at the same time. And there's this group that likes to fire the board while we're recording, knowing we can't do anything about it, really. And so I was quite pissed after we were done recording to see this total out to 45, and we missed it. Now we're seeing under money because we woke up, and there's now wind in Philadelphia. If you looked at the forecast all week, there was some stuff coming in on Friday, Saturday, but Monday night looked clear as a daisy. It was, you know, perfect weather. There's only like 6 mph winds. Woke up this morning, there's now like 16 mph winds. So that's partly why we're seeing a little under money come in here now this morning.
Gotcha. I wasn't quite sure exactly if it was all weather related. I mean, I know the total took some money. So, hey, it's always interesting.
The matchups here are plenty, though, to have some offensive success. And with that potential of more tempo out of Philadelphia's offense, you know, I'm certainly not going under now just because there's, you know, 15 mph wind. But I don't know if I'm also going over at this point. But at 43.5 and 44, initially, very sharp.
Interesting game for sure. Two teams, I mean, I guess many didn't expect to be here for different reasons. The Redskins, a chance to stay competitive in the NFC playoff picture, and the Eagles, I mean, almost on the brink of elimination, a far cry from where they would have been this time a season ago. But it bears watching for sure. All right, Payne, I think we've done enough damage for a Monday morning. As we said earlier, no Wednesday Bet the Board podcast as the college football season has officially wound down. We'll have some updates on when that bowl podcast will be released, probably later December, post-Christmas holiday, as we'll focus on some of the bigger matchups that are available. Of course, we'll have the Monday-Thursday routine for the National Football League until the regular season is over, with a few holiday tweaks right around the Christmas and New Year's holiday. But anything else that you feel we haven't touched on that you wanted to get off your chest before you have to cry into a pillow tonight because you don't get to talk to me for about 72 hours.
Oh, thank God that extra day. I know you're a busy guy. When do we think the bowl podcast can be? We'll lay out the schedule. We'll get it to everybody. Todd's a busy guy now. I don't think I divulged the story.
Hey, whoa, before you throw me under the bus, I think it sets up logically because we look at the schedule. I think Christmas is the 25th, so that's a Tuesday. Maybe
you've never said that word more than ever before this year.
You quiet down. Maybe we pencil in December 26th, Wednesday, December 26th, with the championship games being on that Saturday. That seems like the most logical day for us to break down some of the big bowl games.
Whenever you get time, you just let us know. I don't think I divulged the story to people, but I mean, Todd's gotten so Hollywood now. I called him the other day for important Bet the Board matters here, and some lady picks up the phone. And I was like, ooh, wasn't your mother, wasn't the lady friend. It was some lady who says she's your assistant now. I'm like, what's going on here? I didn't know Todd got an assistant. And sure enough, I was like, well, what do you do for Todd? Oh, you know, I put toothpaste on his toothbrush. I iron his boxer shorts. I mean, this TV thing's really gotten to your head.
Oh, here we go. Here we go. This is how rumors get started. And for being the unlikable one on the podcast to begin with, it's even getting more disdain. I mean, says the guy trying to put together a few bucks, we can buy a Bet the Board helicopter he can fly around in so he doesn't have to put miles on his precious car in the garage.
As long as we don't bet Mike Tomlin anytime soon.
Oh my God! Don't even get me started. I mean, hey, it's not to go off on a tangent. I mean, we always tell our listeners, we tell you when we win, we tell you when we lose, and the math that we've been able to defy over the last couple weeks, having three pushes in what, our last six picks. I mean, that just goes to show how things are kind of running around these parts.
Ooh, the Bama total. Very interesting debate there with the Bama total. A couple sharp guys on the under. If you listened to the podcast and there was plenty on game day, you definitely came away with a win. If you got it early in the week, you kissed your sister. But that was, just to put it nicely, one of the more frustrating games, because all you need is Tua, the Heisman, not to throw a pick at the 2-yard line, just, you know, one time rather than twice. And then, you know, maybe
Rodrigo
not,
Blankenship missing a field goal.
Or you don't, you know, run into the punter before halftime where you would have got the ball back in plus territory to start the drive, or maybe don't drop a 50-yard pass down the seam in the first half. Like, it was the most maddening total. Like, if I could bet that total again, I'm putting three times the amount I had on it last time. It was such an easy over. And Tua has his worst game of the day. He couldn't spot a receiver. It wasn't anything Georgia's defense was doing. But just like we thought, I mean, Bama had 9.3 yards a rush in the first half at halftime. Like, it was just, you know, they're going to bully him around. Just Tua was a little off. But I thought we were going to get overtime. I didn't realize Jalen Hurts, like, was just out for blood there. And then you get the punt, or the fake punt. We were headed to overtime without the fake punt, and it was, again, going to be an easy winner there. But, hey, take the push. Move on.
That is the way the cookie crumbles around these parts sometimes. It is a brutal, brutal business, and can be for even the best of us.
I think our listeners know it was rough to show up this morning on a Monday after the weekend that was.
Oh, it's a little bit more challenging. I mean, you put your best face on. You looked at it. You looked at the gambling world through a glass half full. So for that pain, I'd give you a golf clap if it wouldn't screw up my microphone right now. All right. Anything else?
Nobody likes to revisit losers after the fact. I mean, you have to do it to kind of assess whether you're right or wrong. And once you get past that point, you then don't want to talk about them again on a podcast. But here we are talking about it. Tough.
No, you want to just bury footballs in the yard and, like, tombstones or whatever the hell some of these ridiculous college programs do. Put them in time capsules, revisit them years down the road. But all right,
let's get out of here.
We've done enough damage for today. You can follow Payne on Twitter at Payne Insider. I am, of course, Todd Furman. You can follow me there as well. And our Monday guest at Pro Football Doc David Chow for all of your injury information, along with Dave Mason for any of your sports book perspective at Dave Mason, B-O-L. Best of luck with your Monday night football selections between the Redskins and Eagles. We'll be right back here with you on Thursday to talk about NFL Week 14. But in the meantime, hopefully we'll see you at the window.